Hey everyone, I'm Joseph. Yes, that's right, Joseph from Nazareth, son of Jacob, earthly father of Jesus. I know what you must be thinking right now. There's not much we know about this guy. Yeah, sorry about that. It's just that it's not that I was a bad guy. In fact, one of Jesus' disciples would once write, I was a righteous man, though I didn't feel righteous at the time. I still don't. Can I be honest with you? I mean, I was in a really tough situation. Here I am, engaged to this girl, suddenly comes up to me one day and says, Joseph, I'm pregnant. You're what? I remember thinking, the only right thing to do in this situation is I have to divorce her. I mean, this isn't even my kid. I don't even know who the father is. I mean, I didn't have to know who the father is. I had every legal right to walk away. But in walking away, would have led to public humiliation and even getting stoned to death. So you think about finding a lawyer, a rabbi, somebody who could drop some unbetrothal papers without making a big to-do about it. So we could quietly go our separate ways. They never taught you anything in Bible study class about getting unbetrothed or whatever it was. Well, thank God the angel visited me, because who else would have come up with a name that wasn't in either family's lineage? Jesus. Just didn't make any sense. But I'm sure I'm not the only one in this room who's ever been in a situation with God that didn't make any sense.
For Christmas this year is the unfiltered Christmas. You see, what we saw of Joseph inside the frame is what we know of Joseph. Everything that we're familiar with, the story of what's happening around the manger. But then when we saw Joseph step outside the frame, he started to become more real, more relevant. And that's the whole purpose of this series. It's to help us to understand that the characters that we know and come to love about the Christmas story were real and honest characters. You're probably wondering about this. Just put a long story short, I fell off the back of a truck while holding onto a tabletop, and the tabletop won. I do see a specialist on Monday. Pray that I don't need surgery. All right, back to this. Unfiltered Christmas. How many of you are familiar with Instagram? Just raise your hands. How many of you are familiar with Snapchat? Raise your hands. How many of you are familiar with Twitter? Raise your hands. Facebook, anybody? All these things, all these social medias. Let me just tell you that if you're looking to friend me on Facebook, do not be offended that I don't friend you back, because I'm not on Facebook. In fact, I loathe Facebook. Now, granted, you have to know that I pretty much am, I don't want to say anti, but I'm not, I don't cheerlead social media. And you know why? Because as a pastor, it's a hard enough time trying to pastor you in reality than it is to try to pastor you in whatever Facebook land is. Because in a lot of ways, Facebook is not reality. People sit behind computers and they write and they say things that are not who they are. In fact, Instagram has done more damage to the psyche and the self-esteem of teenagers than any other instrument since technology. There's story after story about people who are professional Instagrammers, and they share the stories of what it takes in order to put together the perfect Instagram shot. In fact, did you know I have an article on my desk that I just read this past week? It's a Times article, and on the front it has a picture of a baby looking out of a carriage, and it says, "Help, my parents are millennials." Do you know why? Because within an average of a birth of a child now, within 2 minutes, that child's picture is on social media. Now, it was one thing when your dad used to take his wallet out of his pocket and say, "Hey, you want to take a look at my kids," right? Now the mother is drenched in sweat and sitting there. And yes, it's an incredibly joyous occasion. But do you realize that there are times when people are seeing for the first time their aunt or their grandchild, their niece, their nephew on Facebook before they see the child in person? These are the realities of social media. We have to be aware of what's happening in the world around us. Unfiltered Christmas is a look into the reality of Christmas. We are not going to put a filter on it. We are not going to paint the picture that we tend to think about the Christmas story, because the truth is, you and I can relate to Joseph. You and I can relate to Mary. You and I can, some of you in this room can relate to Elizabeth. Some of you have struggled with infertility, just like Elizabeth did. Some of you, you can relate to Zechariah. So that's the story that we're going to tell this Christmas season. So check this out. Look at some of these famous Instagram photos that show the picture of what you see on Instagram and then the reality of what's happening around it. Of course, the beautiful picture of pizza. You know, there's actually a hashtag now called Pinterest fail, right? Where you saw these perfect Pinterest pictures and then you go and you put them together, and what happens? They never turn out like that, ever. And so people now started putting hashtags out, Pinterest fail, and they show a picture of what the Pinterest picture looks like, and then they show the epic fail. So this is a great example. You don't see the mess of everything that's happening around it. Now, in my opinion, I'm kind of artsy a little bit. So in my opinion, I love that picture without the Instagram frame. I love seeing the mess of stuff around that it took in order to create the pizza. I love that. That, to me, is really cool. Go to the next one. So this one, again, we see this perfect picture of these little cactuses. Is that right? Cacti? How would you say that? Cactuses that are all lined up in the Instagram picture. In fact, this person who actually put this picture together did it on purpose because they wanted to show all of the mess. This is like some guy's back porch, right? I mean, you got a mop hanging out over there. You got all this stuff going around. But what you see inside the frame is perfect. Let's go to the next one. This is one of my favorites. How many of you have seen that? The obligatory computer shot that we set up little trinkets and things around it to show what we're doing. And then all of a sudden, what we don't realize is that I think there's a dog in there, right? And I know there's a cat. And we've got like the mess of the apartment, but no. Right inside that frame, everything is perfect. Let's go to the next one. Oh, come on. Right? How many of you have been there? You see, the reality is what's happening outside the frame. Yes, you had the muffins. Great job. But it costs your poor kid. I mean, you know, the kid's just screaming, "All I want is muffins," right? You know, but you in Instagram land, what's inside the frame is perfect. But the reality is what's happening outside the frame. And I've got two more. I'm sorry, I've got three more. We'll go through these kind of quick. Look at this. I love this. This is actually another intentional blogger, a person who is actually on Instagram on purpose to show you what it takes to have the perfect picture. And you can see the lighting. I mean, they literally pulled over a desk light in order to get the lighting perfect. So now you're on Instagram and you're looking at these things. You're going, "Oh man, I don't know if I could ever make a dish like that." Well, sure you could. All you have to do is get a desk lamp and pull it over and get the right lighting and put it all together, and then you too could have the perfect table scene with stuff on it. Okay, so look at the next one. Again, the tranquil scene of the girl sitting on the beach with her her, you know, whatever shirt over top of her head and the wind blowing. And what you don't see is the dude over on the left, right? And the kid about to run into the shot, both on both sides, but she got the perfect picture of a day at the beach. I don't know what beach y'all are going to, but guess what? Just because I see your feet doesn't mean that you're having a great time at the beach. Y'all know what I'm talking about, right? We all take pictures of our feet now for some reason when we go to the beach. I don't know what this is about. Okay, we'll go to the last one. Yeah, right. She is doing yoga in the park. She's not. Right? And again, this picture literally is the truth behind Instagram. The truth behind Instagram. In a lot of ways, we have treated Christmas like an Instagram holiday. We've tried to paint these unrealistic pictures. In fact, even in our own lives, it's more about the Christmas photo than it is about celebrating with our families. It's more about that perfect shot than it is about enjoying the company of the people that are right there with you. You're too busy trying to put together something perfect for the internet, for people that you might not know or you might know. But the people that are sitting there right with you, they're the ones that you should be spending your attention on, right? So in a lot of ways, we've Instagrammed Christmas when it's not about that at all. It's about the history. We don't call Christmas a story because it's not a story. It's history. It's history. It's the telling of Jesus' birth. You see, because the reality is, if they had Instagram back then, could you imagine what that would look like? Think about Instagram back during the time of Mary and Joseph. Mary would be taking a selfie, right, in the barn, right? And she'd be doing like the duck face or something, or you know. When the reality is, this is a 14-year-old girl who was probably scared out of her mind, not knowing what realities were gonna lie ahead of her. We'd have Jesus like put together in this perfect little wooden manger, right? And we would have like the perfect picture of him all swaddled up in the manger. And the reality is the manger would have been a nasty food trough that Joseph probably would have had to take his tunic off, and he would have had to clean it out because it still would have had sticky, nasty residue all over it from the animals trying to get in there and eat. And it would have been concrete, folks, not wood. I mean, these are the realities, right? I mean, you'd have Elizabeth, you know, Elizabeth would be taking a picture of her baby bump. That's what she'd be doing. Instead of, again, the reality being that she was infertile for 88 years. She couldn't have a child for 88 years. That was the reality of Elizabeth's story. Not taking some picture going, check out my bump. Are you seeing the dynamics that we're talking about here? Zechariah. Zacchaeus was a wee little man. Okay? And I'm sure that he'd be taking pictures just at the right angle to make himself look taller. Give me anything. Give me anything. Come on. Zechariah would be blogging about how great his church was. He'd be talking about how awesome his congregation is and how great his church was and everything that was going right. When reality was, the man was silent for 9 months because he had lost hope. That's the reality. That's what's happening really outside the frame of those images. Thank goodness that we have Luke and Matthew. Thank goodness that we have the gospel writers Luke and Matthew. Because in Luke and Matthew, we actually get to know who Joseph is. This morning, we're going to focus on Joseph and Joseph's faith. But if we didn't have Matthew and Luke, we would never get Joseph. I mean, he was a silent character. We don't know anything that he said. And so what's amazing is if we look at Luke and the writing styles of Matthew and Luke, Luke is writing to a Greek world. This is kind of like volume one to his two-volume set. Volume one was Luke, the Gospel of Luke. Volume two was Acts. And so he's writing to the Greek world. In fact, in Luke 1, verse 3, it says that his goal was to make a careful account When you're reading Luke, you know that the author is writing very carefully and very meticulously. We also know, here's something really cool to realize, is that Luke was writing from the memories of Mary. When you're reading about Mary's interactions, when you're reading about the story of Jesus, you know that he's going to Mary, going, "Mary, now tell me what happened next." So you're getting an intimate look at the manger. You're getting an intimate look at that whole scene through the eyes of Mary. I love that. Now Matthew, on the other hand, is writing from the Hebrew perspective. He's writing to Hebrew people. He wants to have the Jewish record. He wants to make sure that we understand as readers that Jesus was the fulfillment of all the prophecies of the Old Testament. He painstakingly goes through and he points to the Old Testament, and then he brings us to reality and says, "Oh, and by the way, that's Jesus." And the coolest thing is, if you think about this, there are so many people that are like, "Well, how do we know Jesus really lived? How do we know if he really was born in a manger in Bethlehem?" Think about the prophecies that were foretold. To you, a city of David, a town of David, and the lineage of David, what does Matthew do? Matthew goes through the process and he says, "By the way, Joseph in the line of David. By the way, Joseph had to go back to his place, to the family lineage, which is Bethlehem. Oh yeah, too, that's where David was born. Oh yeah, that's where the Messiah was going to be born." Now, could you think of the rigmarole that they would have had to have gone through if all of a sudden Mary gets pregnant? They're like, Oh, you're saying this is Messiah? We got to get to Bethlehem. We got to get over there because we got to make sure that all these prophecies line up. Folks, that's not the way it worked. When you read the story and when Matthew shares us the understanding, this is a patriarchal culture. A patriarchal culture. They value the lineage. They value the line. They value that Joseph was a person in the line of David. That was valuable to them. Thank goodness that we have Matthew, because he helps us to write the story. And he helps us to know Joseph's roles. Let's talk about Joseph. What do we know about Joseph? Well, it's the first thing that we all know. He was a carpenter, right? But what else you don't know is that he was a simple person. He was very simple. He really was a simple man. I mean, a carpentry back during that time was intentional. We know that he would love to have built stuff. He would love the satisfaction of building and completing something. And we can imagine for Joseph that he had in mind to do what all men his age and in his realm of living would do. And that's to pursue his craft, to become the best carpenter that he can be, to maintain a good name for himself and his family and the community, to attend the synagogue every week, just like a good Jewish man would do, and then to raise a family with Mary. If you think about it, that's a wonderful life. That's a wonderful life for Joseph. Interestingly, in a Jewish culture, in our culture, we make the bride the intention of the wedding day. That's the bride is really what's put out and on display, and it's all about the bride. During this time, it's all about the groom. In the Jewish understanding, in the Jewish culture, it's all about the groom. So if you think about it, up to the point of Mary and Joseph's betrothal, all that's leading up to the betrothal process, Joseph going back to his father's house and he's building on to the family compound, all of it is focused on Joseph. All of it. Until the dream. Until the dream. Joseph observes that Mary is pregnant. Mary comes up to him and says, "Joe, we got to talk," right? And so we have to realize that this is not a light situation. This is not an easy thing for Joseph to go through, or let alone Mary. I mean, the reality for them in that moment was that Joseph was going to do the right thing by quietly divorcing her and moving along. That would have been the nicest thing that he could have done for her and for him. Because the reality of the situation was she should have been stoned to death. She should have been killed. And the amazing thing when we look at this story is you can't Instagram yourself out of this one. You can't take the perfect picture in order to frame this in a way to make the Mary and Joseph and Jesus story look pretty. Because it doesn't look pretty. It's not an easy thing. We tend to look at it now and we go, wow, how awesome is that? Which is good, that's okay. But if we really dive deep and we look at the story, you look at that and you go, oh my word, this is incredible. Everyone would have assumed that Joseph was the father. They all would have assumed that he was just as wrong as she was. And then, again, we would have had to realize that Joseph had to walk around and live with that scarlet letter on his chest just as much as Mary. The scripture tells us in Matthew 1, 20 through 22, it says, Joseph, thank you, Matthew, son of David, because again, Matthew's pointing to the fact that he's in the line of David. Joseph, son of David, the angel said, do not be afraid to take Mary as your wife, for the child within her was conceived by the Holy Spirit, and she will have a son, and you're to name him Jesus. Insert record scratch here. What? And you're to name him Jesus? That's not a name that's in any of Mary's lineage or Joseph's lineage. That goes against everything in the culture. Joseph would have wanted to name his firstborn son after his family. Now an angel comes onto the scene and says, hey, you're supposed to name the baby Jesus. Who's Jesus? What is that all about? Got to keep reading. For he will save his people from their sins. Because you realize that the word Jesus in Hebrew means salvation. Yeshua. Salvation. He said, you are to name your son salvation. Because he is going to save the people from their sin. That's what he's going to do. Sorry. Verse 22, all of this occurred to fulfill the Lord's message. Through who? The prophets. Can you imagine that moment? The gravity of that moment. This angel is standing there, and he says, you're going to name him salvation, and he's the fulfillment of all the prophecies that you've heard. Now put yourself in Joseph's shoes, right? Now a good carpenter accepts what he can touch and feel. A good carpenter accepts what he can touch and feel. Level is level, and measurements don't lie. If it's 3 stones long, guess what? It's still 3 stones long. So measurements don't lie. It's everything for a carpenter is tactile. You can touch it. You can feel it. So you live in an orderly world of numbers and materials and what's known, but now you're thrown into the world of the immaterial and the unknown. And you're expected to just accept it. An angel visits you in your dream. You're a carpenter who accepts the reality of what's real, and all of a sudden you're like, what's going on? Now you're thrust into the realm of having to accept the immaterial and the unknown. Now, assuming that your adopted son is the Messiah, because again, that's not known yet, but assuming your adopted son is the Messiah, how long will you have to wait in order for that information to be known? How long as Joseph's father are you going to have to walk around before he gets to say, see, I told you so? Because from what we understand in the biblical narrative and the scriptures, Joseph never got the chance to do that. Joseph never got to say, see, I told you so. Because his son would be and is to this day the Messiah. So, when we talk about a leap of faith, we typically talk about it in the terms of salvation, taking that leap of faith in salvation. But it's exactly a leap of faith of what Joseph needed to take in order to believe all that he was to believe and to do all that he was to do. And to make difficult decisions, I mean, incredibly difficult decision. Here's the thing about Joseph. For a person who is known for what he didn't say, he really should be known for what he did. He should really be known for what he did. Mary comes to him and says, I'm pregnant. And Joseph doesn't turn around and go, well, it's beginning to look a lot like Christmas. Right? Instead, he kind of approaches it more like a country song. You're cheating hard, will tell on you. That's the reality. That's the reality. Joseph moving to Egypt. This was a huge deal, folks. A huge deal. I can't even stand up here enough and be able to, unless we were actually in his shoes and in his place. You don't just move to Egypt. You don't just all of a sudden pack up. It's not like packing up your home and moving to Chicago. A move to Egypt is a cultural change of life. It's an abandonment of all your securities. It's an abandonment of your community and family. By the way, I found this interesting this week. I was in a conversation on a men's prayer meeting on Tuesday morning, and I got to give credit to Dan, and I were having this conversation, but he credited Alan Rovenstein with the thought. But you know, Joseph shows up in Bethlehem that night, and there's no room in the inn. He's going back. Where is his family all going as well? To Bethlehem. They're all going for the census. He probably has family in that town. But guess what, folks? He's pounding on doors in the inn, and there's no room in the inn. Why is he not pounding on doors in the family? Because his family has already abandoned him. Now, I can't back that up. I can't back that up. But I can tell you that if you look in deeper into the scripture, you would understand that all of Joseph's family is all going to the same place. But they've got no family around him. He's got no place to go. They're banging on doors of inns, and they ended up in a stable. Well, his family was there too. You see, when we see all of this, he leaves his security. He leaves his job. A carpenter in Egypt is totally different than a carpenter in Galilee. But why? Why? Why does he do all this? It's because deep down, and this is what I want you to learn this morning, he had faith. He had faith. So let's talk about faith real fast. Let's talk about faith. You realize in the Old Testament, the word faith is only mentioned twice. Twice. In the entire Old Testament, the word faith comes up. Now, fast forward to the New Testament. 244 times the word faith is used in the New Testament. Now, here's an even more amazing thing. Just in the Greek language, they typically use different words in order to convey different meanings. And the word faith literally is only translated into one single word, and that's the Greek word pistis. So faith in the New Testament is consistent all the way throughout. Old Testament, twice. New Testament, 244 times. Now, we're not saying that the people of the Old Testament didn't have faith. In fact, Hebrews, when you look back at the record of the heroes of faith, they talk about how much faith that they had. But the prophetic writers never wrote the word faith but twice. So, faith, when referenced in the Bible, is totally different animal than what we're used to. In fact, the first big game changer when we look at faith from the biblical perspective is that it doesn't originate with you. We tend to look around and go, well, look at my faith, or even look at Joseph's faith. But the reality is, when you look at the scripture, faith doesn't originate with us. Faith originates with the author and the perfecter of faith who brings it and gives it to us. Hebrews 12:2. What does it say? Read this with me. Let us fix our eyes on Jesus, the author and perfecter of our faith. So who writes the faith story in you? According to this scripture, Jesus. Jesus is the author. Here's the coolest thing when we talk about faith. God desires and God does give you oodles and oodles of faith. But it's your choice if you want to act on it or not. So you can't say, well, I don't have a lot of faith, so that means God hasn't written it in me yet. That's not true at all, folks. God has given us oodles and oodles of faith, but we are the ones that have to see it. We're the ones that have to enact it. We're the ones that have to live that out. You see, that is called a leap of faith because you're trusting that what God has begun in you, he will see it unto completion. So for us this morning, we look at now Joseph, and we understand that he was an incredible man of faith. It took faith to believe Mary. It took faith to believe Mary that what she was saying was true. It took faith to accept her and her expected son. Because again, We don't know at the point of when Joseph switched over and said, I understand who Jesus is, but he's also my son. It took faith to travel to Bethlehem. It took faith to travel from Bethlehem to Egypt. It took faith to travel from Egypt to Nazareth. It took faith to do all of these things. And they were not easy decisions. For a person who is known for what he doesn't say, he should be known for what he did. It took faith not to paint a distorted picture of reality, but instead accepted reality and believed that God knew what he didn't. We can learn from Joseph's faith. Like Joseph, it takes faith to find and believe in a message that many people don't see nor believe. Like Joseph, it takes faith to overcome the temptation to believe that your circumstances are bigger than your God. I mean, the cards were stacked against them. But they got to a place where they believed that their God was bigger than their circumstances. And some of you this morning, you need to get to that place where you too believe in faith that your God is bigger than your circumstances. Like Joseph, it takes faith to step out and allow yourself to be used to do mighty and incredible things in his name. Like Joseph, it takes faith to say, where you lead me, I will follow. Hebrews 11:1 says, now faith is being sure of what we hope for and certain of what we do not see. Joseph was not guaranteed what the future was going to look like. He had no certainty of what the future would hold. But he believed and he put his hope in the one true and only hope of the world, Jesus. Now, can you imagine what Joseph must have felt when he held his son, the Son of God, in his hands? When Joseph looked into the eyes of Jesus, he must have been feeling that he found his hope, that he found his peace, that he found his rest in the one who loves. I'm going to invite you to stand as we close this morning. This particular song is a song that we're going to close every service with during the Christmas season. And I want you to pay very close attention to what we're singing and what we're saying. Because just like Joseph, we need faith to know that we have found our hope. We have found our peace. We have found our rest. And it is in the one who saves.